Welcome back, everybody, to Constructive Uncoupling, the podcast devoted to amicable divorces. I'm Judy Weigel, your host and amicable divorce expert. Why? Because that's all I do, amicable divorces. Title of our episode today, When Time Is Not on Your Side. Time. So we've all heard these iconic sayings. Timing is everything. Everything happens in its own time. Time is on your side. Time is not on your side. Today, I want to talk about when time is not on your side in the divorce. There are five aspects to this. There's going to be the timing in the start of filing, the timing in the filing process, the time to seek attorney advice, when to start the settlement discussions and when to end, and lastly, when to mediate. So let's start at the beginning. Timing and the start of the filing. Even though people know their marriage isn't working, they do avoid filing. It's a really big step to take, and the people need time to take it. So starting the filing is enormous. Lots of thought has to go into that. Lots of planning has to go into that. It's not something that should be done on an emotional level. But forever is not an option if one spouse wants to move forward. And forever is bad for both spouses because you will both continue to build assets together while you're waiting to file. And that's if you already know that you have to get a divorce. Or you force children, if you have minor children, to live in an untenable household of anger or silence, and that's never good for anybody. Lots of time goes by, arguments start, or dead silence ensues. There is nothing to be gained by inaction if you know you need to get a divorce. I mean, this is such a tough reality. It really is. But when you both determine that you should not be married for whatever reason, that's when you have to start making plans to file. Avoidance of that reality or avoidance of dealing with everything that is about to become your reality renders you frozen in your current reality of misery. Let me give you my own divorce as an example, and I've used this on many other episodes. It was obvious the marriage wasn't going well. It was really obvious, even though it was unspoken, that we weren't having a good time. When my now ex-husband came to me and said, I want a divorce, I was paralyzed. I didn't expect it. Funny enough, even though I knew that we weren't having a good marriage, I just didn't expect to hear those words. So when those words come out of somebody's mouth, it's huge. But I also didn't hold it up. What I did, and I don't know if you can do this, but what I did was I said, that's fine. If you want a divorce, I understand. Would you please initiate the filing? I will do whatever I have to do to sign any paperwork, to provide any documentation. I just can't emotionally deal with this because I have to process my emotions right now. It was obvious that he had processed his emotions because he was very calm when he presented the divorce to me. I had not. I needed to, but I wasn't going to hold the divorce up either. Interestingly, because of his travel schedule and where he chose to file for divorce, he couldn't complete it. So it was about a year of me going through the emotional divorce before the legal divorce restarted in a way that we could both participate. But I still didn't try and hold it up. And that's the important thing I want to tell you, because I think that would have made it really bad if I had tried to hold it up, but I didn't. My issue is I will go and deal with my emotions while the reality of a life change is about me. And then I will deal with that reality. And maybe that's why I'm good at the divorce business, is because I understand from my own experience and I empathize with other people's. And I think that's really important when you're dealing with people in divorce. Avoidance of filing can cost you money. Lawyers might have to be hired to handle the entire filing instead of just being hired for legal advice, because tensions can grow out of proportion and civil conversations can't take place anymore. That time for civil conversation has gone too far, and emotions arise with too much time taken before the filing starts. So that's something else that can happen. You do have to pay attention to how your conversation is going, how your emotions are going, and when things start getting crazy, put that aside, calm down, maybe it's time to file. Maybe that in and of itself will be the correction that gets you both focused on the important yet difficult challenge of dealing with a divorce. There is one example of taking time that has logic to it on the outside, but still may not be enough to substantiate staying in the marriage. And that's when people try to stay together for the children. That's noble of the parents to want to consider their children's happiness and stability before their own happiness. It really is. But the questions to ask are these. Is the household calm, or is it filled with anger and arguing? What are we modeling for our children by staying in a marriage that reinforces our misery? And I mean externally reinforces the misery both parents are experiencing. And are we modeling the acceptance of a loveless relationship? I mean, these are really important questions to ask, even though it is so wonderful that you may want to stay together so that the children aren't disrupted, they can stay in the same house, go to the same school, have the same friends. I really do get that. But is that the healthiest thing to do for your children? So while you're trying to go through this, what's your house like? What's it like? Do you avoid each other, you and your spouse? Do you argue constantly? Kids know. Children know when the marriage isn't working. They may not say, hey, mom and dad, why don't you get a divorce because I can't take this anymore. More than likely, they're not going to say that, because more than likely, the hope is that the parents will calm down and reestablish their relationship in a positive way. I mean, that is what a lot of kids hope. But if that's not going to happen, maybe the kinder thing to do is to create two different households. I know with my sister's divorce, when I was talking to her youngest, who was 7 at the time, when he was an adult, I said, so what was it like? Do you remember when your parents got divorced? He said, it was fabulous when dad moved out. And he loves his dad. No aspersions against dad. He loves dad. But the household was filled with anger and stress, and it was uncomfortable and unstable for the children. And so, yes, having two households calms it down. But here's another consideration. What if your religion or your culture are the foundations from which staying together while providing an unpleasant or loveless environment for the children is the focus? So if that's the case, see if there's any compromise within your religion or your culture that would allow you to transition out of the marriage or somehow create two households, because your children will inevitably, and this is the most important thing, your children will inevitably repeat the actions of their parents, knowingly or unknowingly, when they are adults, and continue the cycle of choosing relationships that are not healthy. And they can stay in unhealthy relationships until they understand or choose to break the cycle. So what happens to us is we have muscle memory of our experiences as children, and we have the learned experiences of relationship by watching our parents' relationship. and watching other relationships within the family, but we learn from our parents' relationship. And we don't even know when we repeat the behavior of our parents until our spouses say, wait a minute, didn't you tell me that your parents did this when they were angry or when you were a child? Didn't you say you experienced this from watching your parents do that? And see, we do that. We do repeat the actions of our parents. So when I'm talking to people who are describing their spouse, I just simply ask not to be a therapist, but to refocus how the spouse looks at their other spouse and processes the behavior. I say, well, did any of this happen in your spouse's upbringing? So when your spouse was a child, how did he or she define the relationship of their parents? And all of a sudden, the light bulb goes on. Oh my gosh, yes, this is what his or her parents did. That's what he or she is doing in this marriage. Maybe you can even save the marriage, who knows? But just to understand the root and how important it is, what we learn from our parents when we're younger might help you decide when it's time to move forward with the filing. Because you are modeling behavior to your children that they are going to use. Hopefully it's good behavior, but we're imperfect beings. We're going to model bad behavior too, right? So just be mindful of this. And that may be the one time that you can take a little more time if this is really what you're thinking. But if you can't change the tone of your relationship, if you can't change the energy in your house so that your kids can have both parents while they're still minors, then there's your answer. Time to file. Time to file. There is, though, one positive aspect of waiting before you file. And that's something that I've talked about in other episodes, and that is going through the emotional divorce before you engage in the legal divorce. The emotional divorce are going through the seven stages of grief, because it's the death of a relationship. And like the death of a loved one, the five stages of grief, Elizabeth Kubler-Ross is the one who advanced that. There are other therapists who in the divorce grieving add two more grief processes. And if you look a few episodes before this one, I'm going to go through the seven. Oh, it's the emotional divorce. When I talk about the emotional divorce, it's a few episodes ago. I will give you the seven stages of grief in the emotional divorce. And if you both can go through the emotional divorce before you start the legal divorce, that time will be very well spent. Because then when you go through the legal divorce, it makes the decision so much easier. All the arguing is done. Hopefully forgiveness has been rendered and you can move on. And it's a business. It's business as usual. These are business decisions. Well, except about the kids, of course. But dividing assets and debts, dealing with money, less emotional if you've gone through the emotional divorce first. So that's when waiting to file is good. And if you can recognize and define to each other, let's go through the grieving process first, maybe hire a therapist to help us. Then we can start the legal divorce. All right, number two, timing in the filing process. So now you've started the filing process. And once you've started the filing process, most courts, I can only speak for California, but most, I'm assuming most states have a timing to all or at least some of the filing. There are specific time frames in which certain things have to get done. Reluctantly, the filing starts because at least one spouse doesn't want to wait any longer. So that's one scenario. If both spouses aren't ready at the same time, then one spouse is simply going to have to start the process at a certain point in time. Now, the reluctant spouse then has to be moved forward like the jaws of life pulling people from a car crash. Seriously. The reluctant spouse will then avoid or take way too much time responding to their part in the filing, and it's to their own detriment. always to their own detriment. This is so dangerous to avoid your part in the filing if you're the reluctant spouse. Not only will you anger the other spouse who might be willing to give you more in the settlement for your participation in the filing now, and you'll end up or you'll end up spending more money than you needed to spend by having to hire attorneys to file for you, because then the need for attorney oversight is necessary to move the filing forward. Let me tell you a little story. So years ago, I was pretty much just dealing with the wife. And the wife wanted to move through this. The husband, again, jaws of life had to come out to get the husband to return phone calls, to return emails. And I'm neutral. I'm a legal document assistant. You know, I can't even use the heavy-handed things that attorneys can do to get the process moving. I have to use diplomacy and understanding and all my mediation skills to get people to get the reluctant spouse to respond. And I did all of that. And there was a point in time where I said, look, the divorce can go on without you. You haven't filed a response, and we can't get you to file a response. We can't get you to do your disclosures. And there's going to be a point where there's going to be something filed that doesn't allow you to do anything. And your wife can get divorced without you, at least in the state of California. Crickets. Okay, so we went ahead and did that. And all of a sudden, the husband woke up. Now he was ready to file a response. Now he was ready to do the disclosures. And the wife was over it. She said, forget it. I'm moving forward on my own. So he had to hire an attorney. We gave her a referral to an attorney, and they tried to overturn the process that had been done correctly in order to give the husband the opportunity to participate. I was called in for a deposition. I showed all the emails that I wrote. I logged all the phone calls. My assistant sent emails. We provided all of those, and nothing could be done for the husband, except for one thing. The wife allowed him to participate in a mediation. And by doing that, they came to resolution. But they spent money they didn't have to spend because the reluctant spouse just didn't get that even our office was trying to be helpful in getting him to be engaged in discussions. And his wife was trying to get him to be helpful. Couldn't budge him. So the most important part of the filing that should never, ever, ever, ever be avoided if you're a parent is filing a response to the petition. So the two people I just told you about didn't have children. It was really all about dividing the house. But now if you have children and you're the respondent, God help you for not filing a response. It's the worst thing you can do. And there's a time frame in which you have to file the response. The court provides that. This is so hugely important if there are minor children in the divorce, because filing a response gives the respondent an equal voice with the court as the petitioner. So what does that mean? Okay. When you file for a divorce, and again, I can only speak for California, and I have to speak in broad strokes, but when you file in California, there is a specific amount of time in which the court wants a response filed. Now, if the petitioner doesn't mind taking more time, it's fine, but if the petitioner minds and feels and knows that filing a waiting for this response is really preventing the divorce from going forward, the petitioner can move forward on their own. Yes. Now, it doesn't compromise your community property rights. It doesn't compromise your custody rights. It compromises your voice with the court if a response isn't filed. But that's not the only thing. There are other forms that will compromise you that, if not filed in a specific amount of time, will work to your detriment. There is absolutely no upside to avoiding the time frames within which the court gives you to do your part in the filing. The reluctant spouse can unknowingly give up their voice with the court by not engaging in the filing. So I had a couple I was working with, and the respondent went well beyond the time frame, several months beyond the time frame in which the response needed to be filed. I did many email follow-ups. I made phone calls. The petitioner did emails. Hopefully they talked about it. Couldn't get the respondent to budge. So the form was filed, disabling the respondent from filing a response and setting the petitioner up to go forward. And you know it didn't end pretty. It did not end well. Attorneys had to be hired. Money had to be spent. And the reasons that eventually came out from the reluctant respondent were so erroneous, it showed that the respondent never got legal advice. It showed the respondent just worked in their own world of manipulation, which it just doesn't serve you well if you don't get legal advice, which now segues me to point three, the time to seek legal advice. The absolute worst thing you can do, especially if you have children, is to avoid seeking legal counsel. You need to know the law surrounding your specific settlement by speaking with an attorney, and I say before the filing starts. At least immediately when the filing starts, but I say before. If you know and the discussion ensues that you're going to start filing and you know where you're going to file, you know how you're going to file, whether it's on your own or through attorneys, or online filing, that happens a lot. Get an attorney's advice immediately. You absolutely are doing the wisest thing possible by seeking attorney advice. And I mean a family law attorney, not any old attorney. Not an attorney that does a little family law, but does civil, criminal. No. Go to somebody who only practices family law. It's the only smart way to do a divorce. Using a mediator or a legal document assistant, which are other ways of going through the filing for divorce, it's not the way to learn the law because neither person should explain the law to you or they will lose their neutrality and they will be operating outside the law. So only a family law attorney is going to be the right person. Thinking that your friends can guide you isn't smart. Your friends may have experienced divorce, but they aren't attorneys. There are always fine points to the law that no one but an attorney will know. Get legal advice now. This is no time to let time go by. Or thinking you can manipulate the system and the whole divorce process by avoiding the timing provided by the court for each step of the filing without understanding the consequences of your decision for an action will be absolutely horrible. You can easily lose decision-making power going forward if you have no information about the law and you think the time is on your side if you procrastinate. Again, I just gave you two examples, one without children, one with children. Not filing a response, not doing your disclosure forms, not doing anything else in any other state that has a time limit to it is the worst thing you can do. When the divorce moves forward without you and you're forced to hire an attorney, you may see that there is a point when attorneys can't change the consequences of your decisions. The gentleman and the house was the only thing. Wouldn't answer our emails, wouldn't come in, wouldn't return our phone calls. There was nothing his attorney could do for him. Thank God his wife was still willing to mediate. And she was, and they worked it out. But not everybody's willing to mediate. If you avoid legal advice or unfortunately get the wrong legal advice, you may not see what you might be getting in the settlement is more generous. Okay, so I had other couples who didn't get legal advice. Well, at least the respondent didn't get legal advice. And the petitioner was being very generous in what they were offering with their settlements just to get the filing over with. And the respondents didn't know this because they never got legal advice, and they thought that by not addressing the aspects of filing that they were remiss addressing, they thought that maybe the divorce would never happen. They're just pushing their reality beyond the limits of, you know, anything normal. They both, two different couples, the respondents lost the generosity of the petitioner. And they came out with less. And they had to spend more money in support. That's the high price of avoiding timing. Number four, so when to start the settlement discussions and when to end. It is so important to start settlement discussions as soon as the disclosure forms have been exchanged. Why? Because the values of the assets and debts can change significantly as time goes by, complicating settlement discussions. Dividing the family residence is one of the biggest issues that can adversely be changed with too much time going by. The country can suffer a housing market crash, as we saw in 2008, and the country can fall into a depression, as we saw into 2008. And now that we're in 2020, we see the economy being turned upside down by this coronavirus and the enormously high unemployment rate. Anything can change in time. Address time properly with immediacy. The longer it takes to make settlement decisions, the more opportunity for your friends and family to influence your decisions in a way that doesn't support what the two spouses organically decided worked for them. Oh, how I've seen this happen way too many times. So people are dragging their feet, settlement discussions start, but it's just taking so long to work through them. And the longer it takes, the more you talk to your friends and your family, and the more you allow yourself to be influenced to make decisions differently than you've already decided with your spouse. This makes your spouse angry. Then your spouse talks to friends and family. And now you've gone off the charts with what seemed to be, for you, a very reasonable settlement. The longer it takes to finish and sign off on settlement discussions could cause the spouse who is willing to give more than the law obligates to change his or her mind and only give what the law requires. They become angry over the delay in time. Well, I saw this happen recently with another divorce that I started 4 or 5 years ago. And we were in the middle of the settlement agreement. The first draft had already been written. I sent it out. Lots of money in spousal support and child support. Now, when they came back to the process, the child was no longer a minor, but lots of arrearages in child support existed. And spousal support wasn't completed. There was an end time for spousal support written in the settlement agreement, but the obligation wasn't adhered to. So now we have to go back to mediation. We have to reevaluate everything. It's going to cost them a little more money, but that's fine. If they have to hire attorneys, that'll be tough. That'll be probably as much money as what spousal and child support would have been had it finished on time. And so that's the danger. There's always a financial implication for taking too much time to make and finish settlement discussions. Lastly, point number five, when to mediate. And there's a timing for mediation too. So first of all, what is mediation? Mediation is a conversation and a negotiation over anything that would go into a divorce settlement. The participants make the decisions, not the mediator. That's very important. A lot of times people come to mediation hoping the mediator will make decisions. The mediator can give you best case scenario. If it's a really tough mediation and it seems like you're frozen in inaction. But generally, a good mediator will guide the participants in making the decisions that work best for them with some creative problem solving. Both parties need to be ready to mediate or the mediation won't work. How do you know when you're ready to mediate? Both spouses need to have knowledge of the value of their assets and debts. That's first. Both spouses need to have received legal advice, always. Both spouses need to have gone through the emotional divorce, because the emotions of the marriage and the divorce and whatever happened in the divorce, God forbid infidelity, that will be the backdrop to the way decisions are made in the mediation. And it's best if all of that emotion was dealt with and resolved, so that you can be clear of that retribution, that justice seeking, that anger when you go to make decisions for your settlement. And lastly, both spouses need to be ready to finish the divorce. Otherwise, if mediation starts too soon, it will break off, time will go by, things will change, and you'll be frustrated and have to start from scratch. But when someone wants to avoid mediation, it can be that that person is controlling and might feel that they would lose control if engaged in a conversation that relied on compromise. If you're married to someone who has control issues, mediation may not work, but in order to have a chance at mediating with a controlling personality, I suggest you go to my website, DivorceResourceInc.com, DivorceResourceInc.com. Go to the inspiration page, and you're going to see a slew of books to read. Most importantly, there are books by a gentleman named Bill Eddy, and he is the guru of dealing with high conflict personalities in legal disputes. And then there's another book called The Good Karma Divorce by Judge Michelle Lawrence. And she's great at detailing the emotional divorce versus the legal divorce and how to deal with a high conflict, controlling personality when you have to engage in settlement discussions. And definitely get legal advice. Without a doubt, get legal advice. You'll seriously need to know the law so that you know what you're giving up, if giving in is the only way to finish a divorce. And let me say that one more time. You'll know, if you know the law, you'll know what you're giving up, if giving in is the only way to finish the divorce. And honestly, divorce is an issue of compromise. Mediation is a conversation based on compromise. Give up what you have to give up without regretting what you're giving up just to get the divorce finished. If you're dealing with a personality where it's a no-win situation. And the only way you win is getting the divorce finished. I mean, there's so much to consider when you're getting divorced. And when you're in the middle of a mediation, this is your environment for compromise. But you want to do it with the knowledge of what the law provides for you, so you're not giving up too much. Conversely, you might be a person who never felt you had a voice in the marriage and therefore don't feel that you could speak for yourself in a mediation. If you're this person, you could take a lawyer with you to the mediation. You can still have decision-making authority, but your lawyer will be your spokesperson. If mediation is an option, use it as soon as you can, because decisions have to be made for settlement terms. So whether you're married to a controlling, very difficult, high-conflict personality, or you are the more meek person and never really felt you had power of decision-making in the marriage, you do have options for mediation. You bring the attorney with you, you know the law, you bring a therapist with you even, who can maybe help the high-conflict spouse calm down. Yeah, we haven't discussed taking a therapist to the mediation yet, but yes, taking a therapist would be great. In fact, I had a therapist book a mediation for her about-to-be-divorced couple, and she insisted on being part of the mediation because she said to me, "You will never get through this alone." only somebody who understands all the ins and outs of these two personalities will be able to help in the mediation. And I thought that was interesting. That's the only time a therapist ever came to me to book a mediation and knew they had to be part of the mediation. And she was right. She was absolutely right. I was so happy that she was part of the mediation. She knew when to let me speak. I knew when to let her speak. It just worked out in the moment. We didn't really even plan it. We were just very in tune with watching the couple and assessing what the couple needed. Did they need a little bit more heavy hand of somebody like the mediator who could rein people in with the process of divorce and how decisions had to be made? Or did they need to be reined in by the therapist who saw the emotions getting off track and knew how to interpret what each person was saying? That was a fascinating mediation. Lastly, though, while mediation is great, it's not for everybody, or at least private mediation isn't for everybody. Sometimes the rulings of a judge will work best because then it's an outside person of legal authority enforcing decisions going forward, so that neither spouse can say, well, this was your decision and you made this wrong because, and I gave in, and so you made this wrong because I gave in, and this is what you are. The judge would avoid all of that. Many times, though, and this is really interesting, many times if you have to schedule a hearing for parts of the settlement, like custody, child support, spousal support, or what do we do with the house? The court in California will require court-ordered mediation at the courthouse before the actual hearing starts. And it generally, it's on the same day. And so you kind of feel rushed. So you'll go in the morning early. You'll have to check in at 8:30. You'll get your hearing time, and then you'll get your mediation time. And you'll go to the mediation first. You'll be given an hour, maybe 2 hours, to get through those discussions. More than likely, you'll have attorneys. But if you don't, fine, you can go to the mediation without attorneys. But just having the mediation take place in a courthouse will frame the mediation in a more time-sensitive way. Again, the hearing's coming up in a couple hours, and move decision-making forward before the judge even sees you. That's actually interesting to watch how the timing of the hearing is coming up in a few hours, and now we're being given an hour or two to make decisions, still maintaining control over the process of decision-making, and maybe leaving up to the judge the things we just couldn't come to grips with in the mediation. The mediators work a little fast because they know they are on borrowed time, so to speak. And things do happen to work out a little bit more when you're in this highly legal environment. So, just to recap, there are five aspects to when time is not on your side. And that is the timing and the start of the filing and avoiding the filing. Timing in the filing process once it is started and avoiding your participation in the filing process. When to seek attorney advice sooner rather than later. Never put it off, never avoid it. When to start settlement discussions and when to end, and not to avoid those either, because your value of assets and debts will change, and when to mediate. So I hope this has helped you. We will be back next week with our next episode, and you know that you can always, always email me, Judy at constructiveuncoupling.com, Judy at constructiveuncoupling.com, or call me, go to my website, divorceresourceinc.com. And let me know whether any of this has helped you. Let me know if there are topics you want me to tackle that you haven't heard already. Always new topics. And I want to thank you for subscribing. If you haven't, please go ahead, hit the subscription button. because then you will get your episodes immediately. I always thank you for listening to Constructive Uncoupling, the podcast devoted to amicable divorces. This is Judy Weigel, your amicable divorce expert, saying thank you once again for joining me. See you next week.